Welcome to MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. I'm Russ White. At 6 past 4 following news, Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis talk with MSU's faculty athletic representative to the Big Ten and NCAA, Sue Carter. Simon and Hollis introduce you to the new dean of MSU's College of Human Medicine, Dr. Norman Beauchamp.
What we've done with our curriculum is we've said, you know, after 4 years of learning the sciences, let's get our doctors, future doctors, involved with patients' challenges right away.
And President Simon and A.D. Hollis catch up with MSU's women's basketball coach, Susie Merchant. MSU Today begins at 4:06. Broadcasting from the campus of Michigan State University, this is 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. To MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Sue Carter is a journalism professor at MSU, and she's the university's faculty athletic representative to the Big Ten and NCAA. Here's Sue with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis.
Well, it's really a pleasure to welcome Sue Carter, professor of journalism, a person who is multifaceted in her work as a priest, as a faculty member, as an explorer, and also as our faculty rep to the Big Ten. So, Sue, it's really great to have you here. And I want to start with the faculty rep role for
Thanks,
a minute.
Simon.
And tell people what that is and the sort of the faculty voice in athletics, because that's not a sports page column.
Every NCAA institution is required to have a faculty athletic representative, someone who serves as a linkage between athletics and academics. And it goes back decades. It was foundational to the formation of the NCAA and the Big Ten. And the faculty athletic representative's role is an interesting one because part of it's the institutional integrity, and that becomes increasingly important in our times with social media and all kinds of complicating factors. So making sure that's a significant role. Also, the academic integrity, and we've seen universities where that's gone wrong. So the faculty athletic representative has a role in trying to be an observer, as you once told me, be the eyes and the ears. Mm-hmm. And also... reminding student athletes and coaches that the faculty athletic representative is independent of athletics. As you mentioned, I'm a professor of journalism. That's where I'm housed. And while I love athletics, it's not where I'm housed. I don't have an office there. I don't have a direct report line at all. My reporting line, in fact, is to you.
I've been, the faculty reps, as I've watched them across the NCAA, the Big Ten, take on interesting roles. And one of the things that I've appreciated about you and your work here is not so much being engaged in the policy discussion, because that is a formal role in the Big Ten and right. The NCAA, but the time you spent talking to students and getting what I would call ground truth, and then helping us to better understand how to move forward to have every student-athlete have the best experience possible at Michigan State, recognizing that aspiration is difficult always to achieve, but something we have to work at every day. And so I've really appreciated that you're sort of that in our eyes and ears, the amount of time that you spend with student-athletes, not just, what's the next rule for the NCAA and how do we do some report on standards? But talk a bit about sort of your observations about student athletes as you've done this for a while.
It starts from the premise that students really matter to me. I was a student here at Michigan State, and I think this university has always been outstanding in how it deals with particularly undergraduates, that we care for them. So I think that's part of what feeds into this. At the fall, at the beginning of the academic year, I meet with virtually every team. and talk with student athletes, let them know what the faculty athletic representative does, and that I'm here for them in a way that they might not have someone else. I also go to games as I can, practices as I can. It's a pretty full life. But remain available and open to them for discussions. And while I'm not an interlocutor, at least I can hear them and sometimes hear them into speech and give them the courage and the tools that they need to go and talk about their issues or concerns or their joys.
I think one of the things we did already this off season, I guess you could call it, is a retreat of the Faculty Athletic Council, which Dr. Carter chairs. And it was an opportunity to speak with other faculty as well as students, both student athletes and non, about current issues and setting the stage for next year. As an AD, one of the components of that I appreciated was to be able to step back and understand that student athletes are indeed students, and many of the challenges that we face as an athletic department are also being faced by today's faculty. What social media has become, drugs and alcohol, right. Issues that are out there in our society today that they're not specific to athletics. It's a bigger world and things are everywhere, and that conversation was very enlightening.
It was really helpful, and that half-day retreat grew out of conversations we had at an athletic council meeting in February because we realized we needed more time to talk about athletic culture and how it fits into the larger one. And as a longtime journalist, I also realized that we tend to focus on the minority of incidents or individuals or events that are negative. But the far larger panoply is mm-hmm. that these are really good students. We've got 800 student athletes, and the majority of them are having a really good experience. At the academic gala, we saw 300 students who have a 3.0 GPA or above.
Right.
And we forget to celebrate them and honor them and recognize them. So part of it's just empowering students so that when they graduate at age 21 or 22 or some of us a little older, they're able to go out and be full adults and contribute.
What excites you about Inclusive Athletics, and what gives you pause for the future?
I think
they may be, you know, two sides of the same sure. coin, I recognize.
No, it's a great question.
I'm guessing they'll be the same as mine.
Yeah. So you can chime in as well. So this should be a conversation between the two of you. I'm just sort of the interlocutor on this one.
I think what's available for student athletes, what they get from participation, the skills, the team building. I look at the head of the Student Athlete Advisory Committee, Jasper Conan, who's a tennis player, men's tennis player, and also team captain. And he has developed remarkable skills, and he will do extraordinarily well. So the opportunity for leadership and growth in those kinds of areas. And while not every student athlete will do that, a lot of them do take part. So as we look at what's available for student athletes, we had two recently, David Zoltowski, one, go off as a Churchill scholar. We had our first Rhodes scholar in a while. So those kinds of things. What concerns me is, and I brought with me, so I'll hold them up so people can see them.
This is radio.
Is this radio? I didn't know that.
Zoom in on that.
The division manual for the NCAA, that's about an inch thick. The Big Ten handbook, that's maybe 3/4 inch thick. Filled with rules, and some of the rules are so minuscule and so arcane and so binding. So I worry about this kind of approach. I worry about pending litigation. I worry about the prospect of legislation involving intercollegiate athletics, possibly at the congressional level. So there are a lot of things in the mix. I would suggest that 10 years from now we'll see a substantially different landscape. And it makes me worry to some extent about women's athletics as the money shifts. We may be in the glory years of women's athletics thanks to Title IX, but some of that may change.
I think you're spot on. It's
I've listened to you. No.
Yeah.
No, I think we observe a lot of the same things.
Yeah, it's the generation of revenues in order to create outstanding opportunities for today's student athletes and those that come to watch events. I mean, we really have two purposes. One is to develop tomorrow's leaders that are our student athletes, and the other is to create a gathering place for our community, our faculty, our alumni, our fans. And the revenues that are being generated today are substantial and significant, and they have to continue to be aimed at the opportunities that we're presenting for for those communities that we serve. And that's an area of focus that, you know, in my remaining tenure as an athletic director, as an administrator, I really want to put focus to is making sound decisions, making decisions in the interest of those two areas.
I firmly believe that there are lots of lessons to be learned from sport.
Right.
And if you think about access to women in sport, I think that that capacity to compete, to be able to learn about team, to do lots of things that have come from sport because of Title IX, have given women the opportunity to get greater leadership positions as we need all the talent available to us to move the country forward.
Right.
I mean, I think it's just, and those are great skills to have. And if you're not in that focused moment in competition, you can't replicate that by playing a video game, mm-hmm. no matter what you try to do. Mm-hmm. And those have been important opportunities to broaden the leadership base. But they're not the highest valued if you look at the economics of it. But they pay a dividend to the country and to the world in huge proportion as you think about the discussions that are even happening with the Trump administration about the role of women as they're in the Mideast. And those things are really important to do because you can't teach those without that some of that competition and some of those experiences around sport. Not solely, but, you know. But
it's a component.
It's no different than having the solar car competition mm-hmm. or the hacking competition or whatever it is. There's a lot of things that go with it. So we need to be careful about how we don't lose those opportunities to compete.
Right.
But also care for students in a different way so that their health and safety is better tended, their sense of purpose that comes from wearing a shirt is still there. Their sense of pride that goes with part of this as we think about broadening the base for sport, not narrowing the base for sport. And unfortunately, the model of the NCAA is that if you have high revenue and fewer sports, your conference is more competitive than if you have...
Do the letters SEC mean anything?
Well, but I mean, but it's a different...
I know.
You know, they still have great teams. You know, they win women's gymnastics. It's not without competition. But mm-hmm. there is a way mm-hmm. that things change. And so the amenities that are provided then because of that philosophy become competitive issues for folks who want to have a broader base for students.
Right.
And, you know, and we're judged by the win-loss record in the paper. We're judged by... You know, the gadgets that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also think that, you know, one of the things that as these gadgets become and amenities become so much the attraction, you know, life doesn't have those.
Mm-hmm.
No, life doesn't have a video screen on every locker.
And the transition then for those who don't make it at the pro level is much more abrupt and much more difficult. And I'm not sure that the amenities really are doing what we should be doing, which is making sure that they have a lifetime of experience that's positive, not just a game that's positive.
No question. Or
and
season.
That's really the voices sure. and the discussion of athletics that is very hard to have right now because all of your discussions are about
all these rules here.
About all those rules.
And how to get around them.
And so right. we're celebrating on the front page of the paper somebody who can get around rules.
Yeah,
then there'll be a rule, and then somebody will get around it again. And is that the life lessons we want to teach people?
We need to enrich but not entitle so that students come here with a sense of real values, core values, but not an overwhelming entitlement.
But athletics and beyond. I mean, that's a great
right.
phrase
yeah.
for athletics and beyond.
Yeah, because it's all about that. I mean, and we are a privileged place. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're a lead institution. We hope we're providing an elite education abroad across socioeconomic class, which I think we're doing if you look at our demographics compared to others.
Mm-hmm.
And we're we had 31,000 students who had some kind of service engagement experience last year.
Mm-hmm.
and they're learning that sense of responsibility that comes with education, not just entitlement that comes with education, which I also think is important to moving the country forward. But we have to think about that in the course of intercollegiate athletics and the role that it plays in signaling, you know, what's important. But I also turn back to the leadership both you and Mark have provided in being brave enough to have those conversations and raise those points. Mm-hmm. And to also, I think, work as diligently as both of you do in listening to student athletes. I know both of you spend just an enormous amount of time talking to students.
Right.
I think you guys have done a great job of doing that. We just need to continue to work on it as we try to be better tomorrow than we are today. So thanks for your leadership.
Thanks so much. It is important. We'll keep working on it.
Thank you.
That was Sue Carter talking with Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon. Carter is a journalism professor at MSU, and she's the university's faculty athletic representative to the Big Ten and NCAA. To hear an extended version of the conversation, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today. And this is MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. This is MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with Dr. Norman Beauchamp, the Dean of MSU's College of Human Medicine.
Well, it's really a pleasure to welcome an alum of Michigan State University who's come back to be our Dean of the College of Human Medicine, Norm Beauchamp. So, Norm, welcome. And it's been, I hope, exciting for you to come back and see both the values of Michigan State have remained and also a lot of things to build on.
Yeah, I feel really fortunate to be back here. I left in 1990 after going to undergrad and medical school here, and one of the things that was really inspiring to me was that as a land-grant college, it really believes that everybody has the ability and deserves the opportunity to give back. And so it was transformational for me as a student, and then the privilege to come back and help create opportunities for others was really inspiring. So glad to be back.
Your career, you know, leaving here and going to Johns Hopkins, very different values, approach, though still, in the case of Johns Hopkins, Michigan State, a big international footprint.
Yes.
And then on to University of Washington, another urban setting, and then sort of back to the Midwest with this distributed campus setup that you have.
Yeah, what was appealing to me, well, first when I went to Hopkins, it helped me see what I refer to as the innovation cycle, which is you start with what challenge can't you address with patients, and then how do you connect it back to discovery, physics, engineering, psychology, sociology, and then taking it back through to treat patients. What I saw that was appealing to me about Michigan State is we're what's referred to as a community-based medical school. So we've been in seven communities across the state of Michigan since 1964. So there's incredible trust. And as we look at how are we going to transform healthcare, the challenges and the solutions can't just be in a big quaternary health center. It's got to be what are the challenges are people facing in these small communities, urban settings like Flint, Marquette, Traverse City, Lansing, Grand Rapids, right? But then figuring out those challenges, but then bringing them back to a leading
university where you have all of the diverse skills to help come up with the solutions, but then through teaching and clinical care, re-implementing those in the communities. That was what was inspiring to me.
As you look at our state and population, mm-hmm. Up and down Detroit right now is, you could say it's back on its way to where we used to be as far as being vibrant and energetic. Many people, many students from Michigan State are now looking at that as a destination to live, to work. Does that become an opportunity for us to do additional research? I know it does clinically because they'll need that kind of support. Yeah. But what does Southeast Michigan provide as far as the medical school?
Yeah, I see it as another opportunity that as you're in these communities and you're linking to the care that they're delivering, right? And
right.
Detroit certainly is an urban setting that faces challenges, right? So, for example, in underserved communities, the incidence of diabetes is about twice. Infant mortality can be as much as three times higher. Well, why is that? And being in those communities, you can learn about, and then if you link it back to your research, you can start to think about what are the solutions and translate it back. One of the things that we have done, Land-Grant College, we talked about that before, and I think it relates very much to our, you know, being closer in Southeast Michigan, is that right now one of the biggest challenges in healthcare is barriers to access. And if you look at how frequently physicians on average go to underserved regions in our country, it's about 5% of the time that physicians will choose to go to challenged, underserved regions. Well, we started a program in 1986 called ABLE. And ABLE is a program that takes students from challenged backgrounds and gives them additional background so that they can be successful in medical school. We've graduated 248 students. What percent do you think have gone back to those challenged regions to serve? Turns out 60% compared to 5%.
Right.
And the reason is because these students understand the challenges in these communities. So being closer to some of these challenged communities, I think, help us recruit students, empower students, and then inspire them to go back to these challenged communities and do more good.
With the understanding of the importance and the success that we're having in research across the state, we had an opportunity to take our head coaches over to Grand Rapids and be part of an unbelievable experience. And one of the conversations that took place was a comparison between student athletes and medical students. It was interesting to listen to the coaches and the doctors talk about students coming in the door and students going out the door and the transformational impact that education has on today's young minds. If you could kind of give a synopsis of today's medical student, and I know they're not all the same, but what do you see coming into the College of Human Medicine with today's students, and where is their energy going as they launch out to do work on their own?
We should probably say to you, because you, that they went over this coaches worked as simulated doctors on a simulated patient.
Very emotional.
And they, including using the baby that was having difficulty mm-hmm. breathing. And so that was their part of their learning experience, was that kind of stress and pressure.
Yeah, and there's again, some components to that I think are very important. I think the thing that I'm seeing with students is, and what's unique, again, about MSU, and it starts with the president and cascades down, is this concept of people won't care how much you know until they know how much you care, right? They won't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So what I'm seeing with the students we recruit, we go directly at that, is you always have to start with caring.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that. I've had the pleasure to meet some of the coaches. The second is that what's unique about the simulation is that in moments where there's challenge, success requires a team approach,
right? It requires mobilizing the best skills. It requires staying calm. It requires a comfort asking questions. And so as we're training our medical students, a big part of our curriculum is obviously the role of the doctor, but it's also the nurse, it's the social worker, it's the technologist, it's the family. It's really partnering. And what we saw when the coaches brought the athletes was, I think they learned a lot about how a team comes together in moments of stress to get to the best outcome. So, yeah, students today, they're focusing on caring. And what we're also trying to get them to do is to always question and say, how can we be better, right? Again, analogous to the athletes. How can we do more for our patients every day and their families?
It's kind of what I walked away with is every student athlete that comes into our basketball program believes they're going to play in the NBA. And some have that ability, but it's the process that Michigan State provides that really enriches, I think, beyond the aspiration.
One of the things that the college didn't get credit for in its beginning was the problem-based curriculum that's often viewed as the Harvard curriculum was actually developed when the medical school was created at Michigan State to bring this sort of sense of context and focus early on into the education of physicians, and to have that extend throughout their training, which is the community aspect of sending people across the state. The college is now implementing a new curriculum.
Yes.
And we're going to brand this one a little bit better than the last one, I must say, but it's a very innovative curriculum that starts students in hands-on experiences on day one, in real settings, to augment their education in these simulations where they have to develop tactile skills, they have to develop judgment, but they're doing it after having some experience in day one, as opposed to waiting till like the third year and then doing these skill development and other things as sort of a like shooting baskets in the gym and not playing a real game until you... You want to talk a bit about the curriculum and how really innovative this is?
I do. It's impressive how you know so much about so many things across your university.
Particularly after just getting back from Hong Kong.
That's right. So what?
I may sag in the next interview, but this one's okay.
We're on right now.
What President Simon is referring to is that actually we were probably the creators of the curriculum in the 80s, which was problem-based. And we led with that, which is how a doctor practices, right? Healthcare isn't compartmentalized into, this is a pharmacology problem, or this is an anatomy problem or a biochemistry problem. It really is, what is a malady a patient's presenting with? And so by having a problem-focused curriculum, we help students see, really prepare them for when they actually would have patients. So it was problem-focused. What was the challenge? What we're doing now is we're, if not the first, one of the three first in the nation who's doing something, and we call it the shared discovery curriculum. And I'll describe it this way, is that when I went to undergrad, it was 4 years of study, a lot of it's science background, right? And then you go to medical school, most medical schools, and the first 2 years are essentially exactly that, repeated. So 6 years straight of really learning about science, and it's just in the last 2 years that they then try to put everything in, right? It's by analogy, actually playing in the game. What we've done with our curriculum is we've said, after 4 years of learning the sciences, let's get the patient, let's get our doctors, future doctors, involved with patients' challenges right away. So we teach them about biochemistry. We teach them about how the kidney works, but at the same time, very early on, we want them to be meeting with patients and learning about, well, what are the challenges that patients face with something like diabetes? Well, it turns out there's issues with their biochemistry, there's issues with their physiology, and by starting right away with how do you integrate those, the students then get a new orientation that helps them really lock in what is the importance of a basic science understanding, what is the importance of compassion, what is the importance of the physical exam and integrating it, so that by the time they're done, they will be amongst the very best trained medical students graduating with this great understanding of patient and family-centered care, but how all knowledge can integrate to provide the best care at the point of that interaction.
And so it's really a way of this caring component, this sense of person and self that will be so critical, but within the context of this amazing technology and science that's cutting edge. And that balance is something that needs to be infused early on, because technology is for these students is going to change so rapidly that the technology that you teach them as a medical student will, because of the acceleration of innovation, will be very, very different from what they were going to be exposed to maybe as a resident or 10 years into their career. And this is developing that sense of the connection between person and technology and patient that we think is a platform for this continuous learning and innovation for physicians that are in small communities, not just in fancy academic medical centers.
Yeah, that's really well said. The concept that one of our primary goals is to train what's referred to as a primary care physician, family medicine, general surgery, pediatrics, and to go to these communities. And many medical schools nationally would say, well, those aren't specialties, primary care, where they need to think about discovery. But in fact, they, as much as any other type of doctor, mm-hmm. need to think, how do we do things differently? Mm-hmm. And so with this shared discovery curriculum, we're helping them, again, lead with compassion, but then also understand how to link it to what are some of the other areas that they should be pulling from to identify new solutions, whether it's in underserved urban areas, remote rural areas. It's that. It's kind of the shared discovery that we're making the emphasis.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Beauchamp, Dean of the College of Human Medicine. We appreciate it. Great conversation.
It's great to have you back home.
Yeah. Thank you. Nice to be back.
The Dean of MSU's College of Human Medicine, Dr. Norman Beauchamp, talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear an extended version of the conversation, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today. And this is MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Susie Merchant is MSU's women's basketball coach. She joins Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis now on MSU Today here on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Coach Merchant says her 2017-2018 Spartans will be deeper, more athletic, and really talented.
So it's really great to have Susie Merchant It's been an interesting year for you.
Yes.
Interesting year, starting off and going to Paris.
Yeah, that was wonderful, actually. That was a good way to start the year, for sure. You know, I think our kids had a great experience between Rome, Paris, and London. We were well-traveled, let's say that. And the basketball piece was just such a small part of it. You know, I think if you talk to any of the coaches that have gone or are going to go, I think if you put that in perspective and make that kind of the minuscule part, and as coaches, that's a hard thing to do, and just go enjoy the experience. And we had a wonderful time and appreciated the opportunity very much.
From your experience with the students in being abroad, you didn't get the front page coverage that others are doing, but it really was a path-breaking experience. We had both basketball teams doing this kind of trip. What was the learning outcome for the students? What were their aha moments as you saw them traveling and meeting people?
Well, I think, you know, some of these kids, you know, what I enjoyed the most was watching their faces. You know, I know there's probably a third of my team that would never have gone, never have that experience, nor would be able to afford someday to have that experience. You know, and just to see their faces, you know, things they've only read about in the books or seen on, you know, movie screens or whatnot. That was pretty remarkable for them to actually stand in places, you know, that meant something to world history. I think the thing that surprised me the most with the girls, my team, was the trip to Normandy. I wasn't sure how they were going to be, you know. I didn't know if it meant anything to them. You know, it meant something to me. My grandfather fought there, so I know it meant something to the older generation. But to these, you know, 18 to 22-year-old kids, but to see the respect, the, you know, the true admiration for what happened there, I think was a pretty powerful moment for most of the girls.
You had the opportunity to, I guess, listen to Coach Izzo about his experience the year before and then also educate Coach George as volleyball is getting ready to launch over, the differences in those two conversations.
Well,
taking the personalities out.
Yeah, trying to take the personalities out. Therein lies the problem. you know, Izzo was really more, I liked listening to him because he went over there very basketball driven. And when he came back, he was, I think, surprised himself at like how little that played a part. And, you know, so that really helped me kind of put it in perspective. You know, we have the 10 days of practice. It's a chance to get your team together to launch your season a little earlier than everybody else. So you look at it from a competitive standpoint and not really the educational standpoint. So he really toned it down for me. And I just really tried to carry that torch to Kathy. I'm not sure. I think it's, you know, lit pretty heavily right now. She's going to play 4 matches and 3 are going to be really, you know, intense games. And but the difference for them, though, that's a little bit different in volleyball that she told me is it's a chance a lot of the girls will be seen for pro contracts, which that really didn't happen on our side. I mean, most of the stuff happens over here in the States with agents, and then they send you over. And I think in volleyball, it's a little bit different animal. So she's looking at it as an opportunity to showcase some of her talent and some of those kids. So the better competition she plays, the chance they'll have for a professional contract. But and I tried to tell her. I'm not sure she listened.
She'll come back the same way.
No question. And she's excited about her trip, I know.
Talking about your team, it's now the what they call the off season, but there really isn't one. This summer is going to provide an opportunity to get ready for 17-18. What happens in the summertime?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because of the trip to Europe and the intensity, I think, of the season, and you know, really listening to my girls. I mean, they were pretty wore out. You know, it was a long year, and I think some of my health issues played into a factor. You know, I had to sit out for a little bit there, and that's not an easy thing for kids to have to handle. So, you know, we really sat down as a group when the season was over, and I actually gave them until June. Normally, we're back like May 15th when summer session one starts, and, you know, I gave them a few more weeks, so almost a month off for them just to rejuvenate. I think we get so excited about go, go, go in our profession, but we forget that rest and recovery is just as equally as important as sometimes putting your foot on the gas and training. So to me, a happy player is a better player. And I really wanted him back on May 15th, but I also think that you have to listen to your kids and you have to trust the fact that we've got great professional people here that will get them where they have to be in the off season.
This rest and recovery concept, it's also true as a mom, you've got these youngsters who are into sports.
Yep.
And it's become very intense at a young age. So it's not only the intensity when people come for you to have them on your team, but it starts way early in life in terms of this kind of competition and you're experiencing it as a mom. So what do you think about how this rest and recovery thing should be working out as people think about developing different skills and potentially playing different sports and instead of specializing in this intensity beginning when you're so young?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough now. It's tough for, I think, a lot of parents that don't understand. If you're an athlete and you're good, you're going to be seen. You know, I think parents just get waylaid into this mentality of you have to specialize early. If you're 10 years old and you're not like in this certain camp or doing this activity and traveling with this team, you're never going to make it. And I don't think that's accurate. I mean, some of my favorite players that I've ever coached have been multi-sport athletes. I love the soccer basketball player. I think those are the toughest kids I've ever coached, kids that have a different mentality about them, played multiple sports. It is harder now. I understand that. But I have a different perspective. I really try to, as a mom, because of the coach side of me, I really try to take the pressure off my kids. You know, I mean, I want him to have fun. And the thing that I really try to teach him is to be a good teammate. I really don't care if you win or lose when you're 10 years old. I want you to play the game hard, and I want you to be a good teammate and give to your teammates. And if you do those things, I think those things carry on in life no matter what situation you're in.
So going into the new year, the talk right about this time is rules, is new rules, what's happening different, what's the court going to look like. Men have a bigger coaching box now. Obviously, they've been roaming too far. They've got to expand the box in order to accommodate that roaming. Mm-hmm. But anything in the women's game that's going to be significant?
They added that to ours, too. So that's
you can roam a little bit farther, too.
Yeah,
that's good.
I guess we can roam a little bit.
Does it go out to the middle of the court as well?
No, unfortunately.
Is there a sparring box between the coaches? You right. Can sort of have a conversation or whatever.
I know, right? There's some interesting on the women's side. You know, there was a two areas of restricted arc underneath there, and now it's actually just one. We went to the men's, the 4 foot. We have also now we can decide. We have the advancement rule, the NBA rule, which I love. I didn't think I would like that when it first happened, but I really do enjoy that aspect of the game. And now you can decide right away what side of the court you actually want to take it out on, which is kind of interesting concept. The thing that surprised me the most was there was no conversation about bringing the 1-1 back. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one part of the new rules with the 4 quarters and 5 fouls that I do miss, because it's a strategic thing. You know, if you foul not a very good free throw shooter, you have a chance to get the ball back, and now they're automatic 2-shot fouls no matter what. Mm-hmm. But nothing major on the women's side, really.
What do you think about the quarter system?
I liked it.
Did you?
I did. I did. I wasn't a big fan at first, but I think it does make the game go a little quicker. They have actually added also to the women's side, you have that 30-second timeout where if you don't use it, you lose it. Now you can carry that over. And I think they're just trying to do things that speed the game up for the fan base. They want to enjoy and see a good game, and you want it to be, you know, certainly competitive, and you don't want to have some disadvantaged situations. But I think they're trying to do things to make sure that the fans have a good experience without being there for 3 or 4 hours.
So from there, you've got the rules in play. You got your summer sort of laid out. Let's talk about the Spartans of 17-18. Mm-hmm. Expectations, what you're looking at there.
Well, everybody sees it. You know, we lost Torrey. You know, we were back-to-back years of 2 top 10 draft picks in Ariel and Torrey. And, you know, Torrey was...
They're good problems to have.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you aspire to be. You know, Torrey was... there wasn't probably a kid that wore a uniform in any sport that it meant more to be a Spartan than that kid. I mean, she loved Michigan State. And it's kind of funny because a lot of people talk to me about this next level in the WNBA. She was excited about it, but that's a byproduct. I mean, everything about that kid was her dream was to be here and wear a Spartan uniform. So she has a different, I think, perspective of the next level than most. But this upcoming season, we're going to be really, really talented. I know people really are worried about us losing back-to-back draft picks, and especially Tori, but we had a kid sitting out that was a transfer from South Carolina that's probably the best defender I've ever coached and unbelievably athletic, and she's going to be a difference maker. We have everybody back. Brandy Agee just got her sixth year approved, and she's been working really, really hard to get herself in a position because she wants to go to the next level. And then we signed a really, really talented kid. She's a top five pick in the country. She played USA basketball, has won a couple of gold medals. She's a McDonald's All-American. She was in the Jordan Classic game. She actually just got cut yesterday with the under 19. So she was a high school kid trying out against college kids, and she made it to the final cut. And not many high school kids make that team. So it was a really good experience for her to go up against high-level college athletes in our game. So she comes in, and she's Kevin Durant-like, a little more four-man than him right now. But I think eventually she'll move to that three spot. She's 6'4" and just a great kid. And then we have some other kids that were hurt that'll be healthy. So I think we're going to be really, really good, really good.
So the key will be who's going to be the clutch shooter, right?
The key will be if the coach doesn't screw him up. yeah, you know, we will miss a little of that.
Yeah,
you know,
because Tori was the sort of give me the ball, I'll handle it from here.
Yep.
And so I think the coaching challenge for when you lose a kid like that is who's going to step up? Is that by committee? Is it, you know, how do you sort of look at the psychology of the team developing with that kind of confidence in more than one person, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, she was a dominant player. There's no question. I mean, almost a triple-double every night. And she was as consistent of a player as I've ever coached in their senior year. I mean, I've never seen anything like it, to be honest with you. I mean, she was always good for 20 and 8 and 6, 7 assists. I mean, she really was – I've never seen anybody elevate their game like that. You know, and to be that consistent. That's a hard thing to do for the youth of today, is to stay persistent, to stay consistent in the way they perform. It's not easy. So we'll have to do it by committee, but I think we'll be deeper, more athletic. We'll be able to do more things.
And the Big Ten will be as competitive?
I think so. I mean, we've had some challenges lately, I think, in the Big Ten, like everyone, the Power Fives, you know, a lot of transfers. And some kids have left that have been a little bit of a surprise, but thankfully none from Michigan State, so that's a good thing, I guess.
How challenging is that for your game to be, obviously, recruiting student-athletes to come here, prospects? You know, when you look at the men's game, there's recruiting kids to stay, and then when gaps open up, it's filling those gaps with individuals that are looking to move. Has that hit the women's game as much, and is that a challenge for you?
It has. I think if I had to say the most frustrating thing about the transfer situation on the women's side is that when the student athlete comes in and says they're struggling and want to transfer, at that point you want to sit down and have a conversation and let's open up the lines of communication. Let's get everybody involved that helped you make this decision to come here. And by the time they come in there, there's so many people around them that have set this up. They already know where they're going. The deal's already been brokered and it's done. And that's probably the frustrating part for us as coaches is, you know, part of this is education and learning experience and getting them through some of the challenges of life and the obstacles they'll face. And nowadays, I think when transfers come in on the women's side, not only are they gone, but they know exactly where they're going and they're probably enrolled in the classes already. So that's the difficult side, I think, for me personally, because you want to help kids through processes and have some success stories that way.
Let's jump back to summer again. You've got a number of youth sports camps coming in. Is that I know you enjoy it, but what really comes out of those camps for you when you get to see all those young kids from all over the state and really all over the country come into East Lansing?
Yeah, you know, camp takes a lot out of you. There's no question. You know, I mean, those are some long days. But just for me to see and to inspire and to have, like, little kids be passionate about a sport that you grew up loving and that is, you know, really made a good life for you and your family, and you have an opportunity to hopefully, you know, carry a little torch and pass it to them, and that they get inspired. And that the other part to me that's really neat is we do always do the Q&A with my players, and to hear the questions those little kids ask my girls, you know, things like, how many sports did you play? When did you decide you were going to Michigan State? What was the hardest part? You know, how many hours do you practice? All these questions that I think are really neat, you know, for my kids to have to answer. But to just see that interaction is probably one of my favorite parts of camp.
And you added to that with a program called Empower Her.
Yeah.
Talk about that just real briefly.
Yeah, that's become a pretty interesting mm-hmm. and a pretty powerful weekend for sure. You know, it started out where we just let 150 kids in the door, and this last year we doubled it and had 150 volunteers. And there's just a real need now. It has nothing to do with sports at all. We just did it to help the youth of today, fifth to ninth grade girls, just to be more confident, to be more resilient, to handle adversity, to give back to the community. We have everything. We end the session with a community project as well locally here. So there's just a really a lot of positive things that come from that. But I just think the interesting thing for me was this year we added a parent session where we had a speaker talk to our parents about how we can help our kids, because I think as parents we don't know exactly mm-hmm. what to say anymore. The social media component has gotten, you know, to a point where it's hard as a parent to figure out exactly what to say and how to monitor that. And, you know, it's a big challenge that we didn't face growing up. So we added a parent session, and every parent was so appreciative and thankful. And it's a pretty powerful weekend, and it's definitely resonates with people.
So are you going to take your own advice and do a little bit of R&R over the summer and do some things with your family that will be fun?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I actually just took them to Orlando. I took my boys to Orlando. We do that every year in May. And just there's no better place in the world to have some fun with your kids than Orlando, with Disney and Universal and water parks. So we did that already. And, you know, now it's kind of, it's time to finish up school and try and find a weekend or two here in June where we can enjoy that before camp start.
Well, thanks for joining us. Yeah,
appreciate
thanks,
you.
Thanks for all you do for Michigan State. The basketball is important, but things like the Empower Her weekend, the community service that you do that people don't always see are really part of being a Spartan. So thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
That was MSU's women's basketball coach, Susie Merchant, talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear the conversation again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. To hear segments from today's show and more MSU Today content, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR.